In a world crying out for a top 10 show. John Rocha and Matt Nost are here to bring you the top 10. Brought to you by the Schmoes Know. Take it away, boys. Welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of the Top 10 Show. I am John Rocha.
I am Matt Nost.
I should have sang that beginning, Matt, because this is a music Top 10 music biopics this week.
You got good pipes?
No.
No?
I did karaoke for my birthday because I can't sing, so I enjoy acting the fool up on that stage. A lot of my friends can sing, and they bring karaoke CDs with tracks listed out for the karaoke DJ to play. That's a level of intensity I do not understand, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's too much.
Right? Don't you think?
That's too much. I've never been a karaoke guy.
Yeah, fair enough. That's why you didn't get the invite to my birthday. I was like, I figured Matt's not going to come to karaoke party.
Sure. Way to shroud it in that.
It's true.
Did not get an invite. Listen to that. Listeners didn't even know about it until after it happened.
I didn't even invite Christian because I was like, he won't come out with two kids on a Saturday night.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm not worried about it.
Thank you.
I haven't been to a friend's birthday in forever. They threw a big party.
Yeah.
It might be since Christian's because he's like, it's going to be a roast.
When was that?
That was like 3 years ago.
Oh, okay. Because I didn't get invited to this most recent one where his wife had a cookout or some shit. I didn't get invited to that.
Yeah, me either. That's fine.
Yeah, I work with him though.
True.
Other people got invited from this job. Not me, not Rocha. No, sir.
Well, the real question is, did everyone that works here get invited?
No, everyone did not get invited.
Okay. Hattie invited everybody but you.
Then there's an issue.
It's something utterly different.
Then we need to have a conversation, I think. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, to each their own. Like, I used to love going out, and, like, I didn't care that it was my birthday. It was just out hanging out with friends. We're going out to have a good, like, there's 30 of us.
Yeah.
And we're just going to take over this bar and have a great night.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll do that.
I think that's what I'll do next year. So everybody will be invited next year. We'll just get a bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lindley doesn't like, she's like, honey, this is it for you. Like, this is the last karaoke night that you'll do your birthday. I will plan it from now on. We'll get a fucking place. People will come, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all right, whatever you want. Whatever you want to do.
Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for you. There's certain battles, my friend. Certain battles. Some aren't worth it.
I'm learning. I'm learning, Matt, because this is pretty much it. Like, we're probably going to get married just randomly at some point in November. Just letting you know.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, for real.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
I'm happy for you.
It's all numerals. It's all, for her, it's numbers. Like, it has to line up numerically.
Astrology?
Yeah, it's not astrology, no much, but there's something about numbers. The symbolism of numbers for her is a really big deal. So I'm like, you pick the day, whatever day we're supposed to do it, I will show up and bring a witness.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying for the two of you, like, how quickly this has gotten to this point. Like, your age and her and birthday or something. And I was like, I was expecting an explanation there as opposed to just, like, whichever date she prefer.
It's a date.
Yeah, that's why I said astrology. Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you know, reading tea leaves?
That makes sense. But for her, it's about numerology, man. So I'm just like, whatever you say, we should do it, then we'll do it. That's fine with me. I'm not pushing.
Congratulations. Yeah, I had a tiny wedding. I invited no friends.
Yeah.
It was my immediate family and my grandma.
Yeah.
And her immediate family and her grandma's. And that was it.
That's perfect.
That's it.
That's what she wants.
I had a buddy officiate it. We went out to Santa Monica. You can do it on the beach.
Yeah.
As long as it's under 30 minutes, you don't have to pay for anything.
Really?
Yep. So
what?
We went down to the beach. We had a nice thing on the beach, and it was just us.
Oh, shit.
And people were walking by, but they were like 20 yards away. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
And we were in and out and then went and had great steaks right up the way. Just walked over, and we all had steaks, and we had a great night. And then we got a hotel for like 3-4 days right there in Santa Monica.
Wow.
And just stayed there for 3-4 days.
Matt, I may follow suit. She does not want a big wedding at all.
Yeah.
She wants something small. She wants to get married on the beach. No fucking lie.
It's free.
I don't know. You could do that in 30 minutes, as long as you're in there in 30 minutes.
As long as you're in. And there's nobody there to clock you.
Wow.
And I think we took 45.
Wow.
So.
Did you have like a whole thing, like walking in, people playing the music and all that?
No. It was just my buddy officiated. He got ordained online, but it was legal.
Okay.
And then, our families sat behind us.
Yeah.
And we just.
Wow.
He
So you didn't have chairs put out on the beach for people to sit on?
There was seating.
Yeah.
We took care of you.
Okay.
But yeah, you don't need a permit. You don't have to pay anything. You just go down, do it. You're in and out.
That's incredible.
Just go walk to fucking dinner. It's great.
Shit.
And especially that time of year, it's not as busy.
Right.
And if you can do it like, you know, if you can do it like at a less busy time, then it's even.
Sunday morning's probably the best time. No one's going to be out on the beach on Sunday morning.
I had no idea, dude. I haven't lived in Santa Monica. I don't know what the weekends are like there.
Well, we would probably do it at like El Matador, like down there. Because that's okay. A really kind of secluded beach. It's a bitch to get down all those stairs to walk. But if people want to come.
Yeah. Look it up. Maybe they changed the ordinance. But
I'm going to look it up, dude.
It kind of looked like one of those things of people have been getting married on the beach in California since California was California.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's one of those of we've always done it. You're allowed to do it.
Right. Okay.
You know,
done and done, son.
You used to be able to drink and smoke on the beach until not that long ago.
Yeah, I remember that. That's for sure.
So do I.
Yeah. Wow. All right. All right. It's been decided. Anyway, this week we're doing top 10 music biopics, as we said earlier, in honor of Bohemian Rhapsody. I've seen the movie. I don't think Matt's seen the movie yet.
I haven't.
Okay.
I will be seeing it at some point because it's one of the few movies my wife saw the trailer and has been jazzed for it ever since.
Wow. Yeah.
And I had to break the news to her the other day and be like, early reviews are not good, baby.
Yeah, I don't understand. We loved it. Everyone here at Collider loved it.
Okay, good.
So we don't understand. And we saw, like, Screen Junkies people loved it. IndieWire, I think IndieWire liked it, didn't love it, but liked it. A number of other people online liked it. But then there's these other critics who really didn't like at a level of vitriol, which I don't understand. I'm trying to figure this out, whether they are mad because Bryan Singer and his shit
His baggage.
Exactly.
He brings with
him. So maybe people walked in the theater already wanting to hate it. The other thing is it's not a gritty exploration of the life of a rock and roll artist. It's literally
it doesn't paint itself that way.
Yeah, it's a fun biopic about Queen. That's what it is. And so to me, I'm confused. And it does lean into gay stuff. People worried about the gay stuff. It leans into the gay stuff pretty hard. So you're not. It's not something you don't think about, or it's not prevalent. I'm not trying to ruin anything. I'm just saying. I'm just giving you the window. So the people who are listening, who are maybe reading these reviews, maybe go and make up their own minds and go see the movie instead of having it crash and burn without seeing it. And Rami Malek is incredible. Just incredible.
I want him to have some sort of success beyond Mr. Robot because his cinematic run so far has been miss.
Yep, yep.
The Gods and Generals, the Papillon.
Yeah.
Oh, Papillon.
I don't know why you remake Papillon. That makes no sense to me.
That is a pure, this movie only gets made in the 70s.
Yeah. And, for a reason.
For a reason.
Yeah.
Like, I get why it is what it is and why people think of it the way they do and all that, but it's not one I will ever probably rewatch.
Nope. Not even a little bit.
Yeah. Saw it. I'm good.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the thought that. They thought they could make a better one or something. I don't know. Or it's a tale that you need to tell.
You're gonna make a better one than Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman. Go knock yourself out. You know what? Go. Spider. Go ahead, Spider. Go ahead. No one can tell what to do with Spider.
Good for you, Spider. Good for you. You told me to go fuck yourself. I'm good, Spider. And I thought you said I'm good. Oh, that's I love that fucking movie.
That scene, man. Anyway, so we thought we'd break it down. There were a lot of these to choose from. A lot of biopics that I didn't, even as a biopic guy in the Shmoda, I forgot that there are so many of these music biopics.
Yeah, and some until you sit down and start making a list, I hadn't really thought through the prism of being a music biopic.
Yeah, yeah, good point.
It didn't make my list for that kind of reason.
Yeah.
For various reasons.
Yeah.
There's one exception to that, but it's my, you know. 10.
I have one exception to it as well. But
everything else is like, oh, yeah, you know, the musician, I know that musician. Mm-hmm. Here's the story of this musician, either the entire duration or a sliver, although I think most of them, you know, span a long time. But there was certain ones where I was just like, oh, that's it. Yeah, that technically would count. Yeah. Start writing out this and, there are some really good choices. There's a couple that just came down to personal preference towards the bottom of the list and be like, I like this one better. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that one, but I enjoy this one, or I found this one more fascinating, I didn't know this full backstory kind of thing.
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah. So it's a good list. There's a bunch of good movies. I'm sure we have a lot of the same.
Yep.
A few different here and there.
Probably.
I wonder if our number one is the same.
I wonder too. It might be. Might be a rare thing because there's so many to choose from. Might be the rare thing where the number one is the same movie.
But anyway, so you want to start?
Oh, yeah. We might as well. Yeah. Matt, you want to tell them how the show works?
Yep. Once we set the topic, we go our individual ways and create personal top 10 lists. Show back up here. I do my bottom three. He does his bottom three. I do my next two. He does the next two. Then we trade one apiece. Once we have revealed our personal top 10 list, we create the shows between the two of us.
Boom.
So.
All right.
Jumping right in.
Yeah.
Number 10. This is my exception. Is Shine.
Okay.
Because I didn't really know the character.
It's a true story.
It is. Yeah. True, I just didn't know. All the others, I knew the artist.
Right.
To see the backstory. Mm-hmm. When I think music, biopic,
yeah.
It's like, I have an understanding of who they are, and here's filling in the gaps behind the scenes.
Right,
and all that,
right.
And tells their story. Whereas within Shine, I did not know the character Jeffrey Rush plays, which is David Helfgott.
Yep.
Who's an Australian prodigy and eventually snaps.
Yes.
And then just the aftermath of that and how he picks himself up and kind of takes charge of his life on some level.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting story, and I think he's still around right now. Mm-hmm. He hasn't passed, and I think there's a documentary coming out about him.
Oh, wow.
In the near future.
Okay.
I didn't until I just looked this up to make sure. – And then I rewatched it actually for this show. I hadn't seen it in a while. And I was like, oh, yeah, I do like this one.
I like this movie a lot.
Yeah.
It was a hard cut. It was a hard, hard cut. But in the end, I just thought it's not one I go back to all the time. And there's a little bit of dating on it with the Vanessa Redgrave stuff at that end and everything. But Jeffrey Rush is incredible in the film. And so is Noah Taylor. I think he plays him as a younger man when he has the breakdown playing the – is it Rachmaninoff's third or whatever?
Yeah, Rach's third.
Yeah. He's playing it and he just has that breakdown.
John, well, he finishes his concert at the Royal Symphony Hall.
Right.
And it's some sort of like graduation. Mm-hmm. You're getting, in essence, maybe your PhD or whatever the equivalent of that is within music.
Right.
Yeah, your doctorate. I'm not sure. And he finishes it, and just the amount of stress and everything it put him into, he just keels over right on stage.
Yeah. And this is like early 2000, 2005 or something like that, I think, film.
I think it's earlier than that.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think Jeffrey Rush won the Best Actor Oscar for this
movie. I
know
he was nominated 100% for it.
Yeah. I think he won. I'm not sure. But what's incredible about this, though, is that it's literally a mental health story. It's literally a mental health story. And now that we're so aware of it in 2018, it's interesting to go back and see a movie like this that has all the markings of a mental health. Like if it came out now, people would be trumpeting the film from that aspect of it.
That's true.
Yeah.
That might be part of the storyline as to why you need to pay attention to it.
Yes. Yeah.
Because the solution at the time was to give them shock treatment for like 2 years or something, 3 years. Yeah. Which they just offhandedly throw in as a piece of information. You know that he did it.
Yeah.
But you didn't know until later on that it goes on for that kind of duration.
Yeah.
And then the effect that it has on him. But he already had a fragile sense of self.
Yeah.
And wrapped up in how his father viewed him, or at least how he thought his father viewed him.
Right.
It's a weird dynamic. But the father was a Jewish man who fled Europe because of the Nazis. Mm-hmm. And him and his wife had loss. And there's all that. And he's always talking about you have to be the one that stands up to the world and all this. And you need to be stronger and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
A lot of pressure.
And he's kind of pressure on top of being somewhat of a timid individual.
Yeah.
So he breaks on some level from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, it's a really interesting movie of a character that I did not know before this. So if you haven't seen it, go back, watch Shine.
Yeah. And not just for Jeffrey Rush. Armin Mueller-Stahl as his dad is fantastic.
Yeah.
He is just – and it's heartbreaking. And there's a scene near the end that you're like, wow, man. If you have any struggles with your own father, that scene at the end might fuck you up. Like in a emotional way, not necessarily like in a – mental way, but certainly in an emotional way. So it's like it's a fantastic film, and it pretty much announces Jeffrey Rush as an actor.
It does internationally
as
a guy that's like, this guy's gonna be around for a while.
Yep.
So my number nine is the Buddy Holly story.
Oh, the Gary Busey one.
Uh-huh.
Nice choice, man. I
not
like
on
that
your list?
Film. Not on my list. He won the Oscar for that.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He's good in it. The only reason it's so low, there are certain moments that just seem too nicely they're trying to wrap up the story.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially like his old band showing up at his house in New York,
right.
And they're going to fly out to – and it seems like, oh, they're happy ending, mm-hmm, going, and then it ends where it ends.
Yeah.
But it's a hell of a story of a guy that's just in Lubbock, Texas, and gets plucked relatively out of obscurity, doesn't realize his record went to press and is being played on the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah.
And it's a huge hit. And out of nowhere, he goes from a guy struggling to find a direction in his life to being now charting numerous singles on the Billboard 100 and yeah. number one hits and stuff like that.
Right.
And a character that a lot of people felt was a music innovator that was taken from us too soon.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, man.
So much so that I've heard the joke over the years that he was revolutionary in the same way that like Les Paul and a few other guys were. Mm-hmm. And
Richie Valens.
Richie Valens was also like, this guy could be something.
Yeah.
And Big Bopper. Well, you know, we remember you now, Big Bopper.
Yeah.
For having been on the plane. It's a terrible.
It's true, though.
But it's true.
He wasn't like he was. Like, he had one song, Chantilly Lace.
He would have been relegated to obscurity.
Yep, absolutely.
In the background, but unfortunately, because of his demise with these two individuals, but primarily Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
We now remember your name.
Yeah.
Because he was a disc jockey that had this novelty hit.
Right.
That in the movie, he walks out to do the hit with a phone because there's a phone bit within it. And he's just kind of carrying the phone as he's singing and stuff like that. And you're like, wow, this is really a novelty bit.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, you know, Dr. whatever his name is that did the
Dr. Demento.
Yeah. Weird Al got his. Like, there would be a stage act of novelty, weird novelty shit like this that you could tour doing one song.
Those were the best. Remember Rick D's fucking doing that Donald Duck song? Or Disco Duck. Disco Duck.
I remember hearing about it. I've never actually heard it.
He was a DJ, did that one song because he can do a Donald Duck imitation. They did a song called Disco Duck in 79, I think, and he made that. He made a lot of money doing
Rick
that
D's.
D's in the morning. Yeah. It's a good. I remember watching it for the first time actually last year, maybe late in the year on TCM, on Turner Classic Movies. I'd never seen it before.
Okay.
It had been on my bucket list of films to watch, and I finally saw it. It's an enjoyable film.
It
didn't grab me. I think if I had seen it a little earlier in my life, I might have like really enjoyed the film. But because I've seen so many films, you know, with that kind of bent about a performer who becomes what they become, it didn't quite grab me as strongly as it was. But it's an enjoyable film, man.
Yeah.
And he's great in it. And you're like, wow, this Gary Busey. I see why people thought he had all this promise.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, he's so good at it, man.
Yeah, I mean, after this, like, he kept popping up in really good movies, and then eventually, you know, he became Gary Busey. Whether or not that's the car accident that purported to mess up part of his brain.
Maybe.
I think it was a car accident, something like that. I don't know. I mean, you say there's nothing you'd say about him because we all know how bananas he's gotten in his later years.
Yep.
But yeah, he's really good in it.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting story of like a, you know, an act that they thought was a black act coming out of the South, gets signed to a black label and then shows up and it's like, oh, it's white guys. And he goes to the Apollo. And I like that they showed him winning over the crowd in the Apollo because if you got to show me stretches of music within it as opposed to doing like A Star Is Born where you only see like a minute snippet and it just kind of helps move the story along with these two characters. This is a different version of seeing them in their element.
Yeah.
And being a true story, you know, you can go back and verify that happening. But there is that how many individuals like that was a white act that came into the Apollo Theater and got people up and dancing and whatnot.
Yeah.
And vice versa when a black act like you see in Dreamgirls going to a white only kind of club.
Right.
But eventually one of those just crushed and brought the house down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a story. It's like, oh, that's interesting when that happened. But if you haven't seen Buddy Holly's story, I definitely think it's worth to go back and see Busey showing all the promise in the world. And
it's a short movie. It's not a long movie. So you can enjoy yourself.
He had a short life.
Yeah, short life. Fair enough. All right. What's your number eight, man?
Eight is What's Love Got to Do with It?
That is a punt.
Okay.
All right. So my number 10 then is Immortal Beloved.
Yeah, not on my list.
Yeah, okay. I absolutely love this movie, man. It's not as – obviously, there are nine other movies that I put on the list ahead of this one, but I had to put this one on the list. This is one that I still come back to every once in a while and watch. It's such an anti-Amadeus movie that I really enjoyed. It's not told in the way that Amadeus is told. It's a more brutally honest film and a rough film about Beethoven. And Gary Oldman's incredible in it. Mm-hmm. He's not a likable guy through most of the movie.
No.
Which I thought was surprising to do a biopic about a guy who's not likable. likable. They throw in a love trilogy. Well, it's not thrown in. It's really the crux of the movie, the love trilogy that happens here between him and his brother and this woman. And then you see Gary Oldman's progression as Beethoven as he becomes more deaf and more deaf. And then the terrible relationship he has with his son. All of that is well done. But what really sells me and makes me come back to the movie is the scene, the Ode to Joy scene. The 8-minute Ode to Joy sequence
sure.
is incredible when he is, you know, when they're playing it for the first time and he is, they're taking him back to a time when he was a child and he was happy and he mm-hmm. could, and the world, even though everything around him was terrible with an abusive father and an abused mother and his ability to go find the place where he could create his music inside of himself,
yeah,
figuratively and realistically, was incredible to watch. And I just love the performance. It's not as magnetic as Amadeus, which is why it's not higher on my list and why it probably doesn't get a lot of love from people. But for me, it holds a special place because I just enjoyed the fuck out of this movie for the fact that it does not shy away from trying to show you what this guy actually was like, even okay. though he's so well respected in the musical community. He's not the nicest dude.
Oh, you know, of the straight classical individuals, yeah. he made my favorite music.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Hands down.
Interesting. All right. But you didn't like the movie, or you just didn't? It's not doesn't grab you.
It's you know.
Okay.
I don't think I'll ever see it again.
Fair enough. All right. My number nine then is Control. Have you ever seen that?
I have not.
Oh, man. That is a damn good movie. I wish I could move it higher up.
It's ninth damn good.
Well, still, it's a damn good movie. Dude, there's a bunch of them I couldn't put on here. But this is – I wanted to put this one higher. And maybe I will as the years go on. I've seen it twice. It's a black and white telling of Ian Curtis, who was the lead singer of Joy Division, mm-hmm. which eventually members became New Order. But it's a really incredible portrayal by this actor. And I had never – like I had heard Joy Division music, but I'd never been a fan of Joy Division until I saw this movie.
Okay.
And then I went back and like Transmission and you know she's – whatever it is she's – I forget the name of the song, but all these other songs that came around during that time, I had no idea about these songs. And so I rediscovered Joy Division through this movie. But the performance was incredible. I think, yeah, I forget what the actor's name is, but he was really good in the movie. And it traces his story and their story as it came together as a band. Whereas Queens is a very happy biopic, this is a more like a rough biopic because he has – these issues with his brain. He has these issues throughout the movie where he has these spasms. And they affect his ability to work, his ability to communicate with his family at times. And he has these seizures and they affect his mind so much so that he becomes suicidal. And so what ends up happening as the movie goes along, if you don't know anything about Ian Curtis, it's a tragic story. And that they pull no punches in showing that.
Okay.
And I think Samantha Morton is the actress's name who plays his like off and on girlfriend and then eventually wife who he like kind of cheats on with this other German journalist because he has a thing for her. It's just – it's in black and white, which is really not done that much anymore.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic exploration of this guy's life and I can't recommend it enough. And I saw it on a number of lists higher up on other people's lists. I think I just need to see it more and maybe I'll appreciate it a little bit more and it'll move up. So.
Sure.
And if you haven't seen it, like Matt, give yourself a chance to see it. It's actually a really well done film. All right. My number eight then is The Doors.
Not on my list.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
I don't think I'll ever go back and rewatch that.
Really?
Nope.
Jesus. I've owned every version of this movie that there is from VHS to Blu-ray – I mean to DVD to Blu-ray. And if they ever come out with a 4K version, I'll buy it as well. Oliver, it's not a perfect movie. Absolutely. I'll grant you that.
Okay.
But Kilmer's performance is phenomenal.
Yeah. It's amazing that we all didn't think that he looked like Jim Morrison before.
Yeah. Right?
And then you see him in it, you're like, holy shit, that's Jim Morrison.
Yep. And he sang.
Huh? And he had everything that I thought Morrison would be, he mm-hmm. really became that individual. It was impressive.
It is. And you get Kyle MacLachlan as Ray Manzarek. You get Frank Whaley as Robbie Krieger. And you get Kevin Dillon as John Densmore. And I think there are issues with the casting possibly, not with Manzarek. And maybe not even Krieger, but I think Densmore, I think Kevin Dillon quite wasn't at that level to hang with these guys and what they were doing. So he gets kind of relegated in that way. But the imagery that Stone has in this movie is fantastic. Cinematography, mm-hmm. the lighting, the concert scenes, especially the Not to Touch the Earth sequence where he comes out and he starts – like he puts in these Native American people dancing around with him in a shaman type thing. He really brings you into the world of the Doors in concert, right, okay. if you were there. And I think that's what he does effectively in the movie. But then the exploration of his – of who he is as a person, once again, not a good person for the most part – consumed with writing his lyrics, and some people hate the Doors and they hate his lyrics. They think it's, you know, schmaltzy college poetry.
Yeah, it's high school poetry.
There you go, high school poetry. I get that, but I like his stuff and I like the songs.
There are a couple songs that I think are just awesome.
Yeah,
and then some of their biggest stuff, I'm like, no thanks, that is not for me.
You're like, I'm good.
No,
so. But yeah, so for me, I don't go in and expecting a perfect film, but you may come out enjoying a lot of the concert sequences that Stone is able to film. And Meg Ryan does a great job as Pamela – I forget what her last name was, yeah. but she's Morrison's girlfriend slash possibly wife. And great stuff, just great stuff throughout the whole movie. If you want to, if you enjoy Doors music, I think this is a good film about that. But it doesn't quite get there 100%, which is why it isn't higher on my list.
Yeah, I just added to the canon of Stone of I'm not sure what I get with him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he came out the gate, you know, Platoon.
Yeah, Platoon, Salvador, Wall Street.
Born on the 4th, him. I'm not a fan of that one.
Born on the 4th of July. I agree. That's a film that doesn't quite get there as well.
It's making us as the audience pay for the sins of Vietnam,
but
I didn't live through it, so I don't need to tear that scab off.
Yeah.
So watching it for 2 hours and whatever it is just – it has no effect on me because I don't carry any of those sins.
Yeah.
So because of that, it's utterly lost on me.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. What's your number 7, man?
My number 7 is Ray.
That's punt? A punt. Just a slight punt, but a punt.
Sounds like a number 5 for you.
Maybe.
My number 6 then is Coal Miner's Daughter.
Wow. Well, we couldn't have more different lists. How interesting. All right. Coal Miner's Daughter. Sissy Spacek. Yeah.
Early Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, very early Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, I think this could have like cemented, hey, this is a guy that can act.
Mm-hmm. He's not even craggly in this one. It's so early.
He's still kind of craggly.
Dude.
A little bit. Well, I mean, some of that is like acne scarring and whatnot.
Oh, right, fair.
So, you know, it's not as bad as certain other actors.
Right.
But it's still, you know, prevalent.
Okay.
Sissy Spacek, and it's about what, Loretta Lynn,
yeah.
And her rise, how she became a country, you know, music star icon. Mm-hmm. And from the outset, I was like, I don't care about this story.
Yeah.
Even though like I was born in Nashville, all my family, my mom's side of the family is about 90% in Nashville.
Yeah.
I've been going there once a year now for most of my life. Mm-hmm. Although as I get older, it's every couple of years kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up around all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I knew who she was, but I don't know. She was the first woman the first lady of country music. Mm-hmm. That's what I knew her as.
Yeah.
A staple on the Grand Ole Opry back in the day.
Yes, she was.
And all that jazz. But the actual movie itself, you think it's going to start like this slow plotting kind of pace, and I enjoy it for that. Mm-hmm. You get to know who she is, the appellation. She is a coal miner's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
A big family and just growing up in this small town in Kentucky in mm-hmm. the eastern the side of it, near the southern Appalachians there. And who Tommy Lee Jones is, the fact that he had been in the Army and gotten out and she was 14.
Yeah.
And they got married and all that stuff. And because he has certain expectations and she's 14, man.
Yeah, man.
Like, what do you expect from her on some level?
Yeah.
But the slow growth and progression of that, and I had no idea before seeing this movie years ago, that she actually technically got her music start in Washington,
mm-hmm.
in the state of Washington. Mm-hmm. They moved from Kentucky over to there and cut some honky-tonk records and then took it out on the road back down south.
Mm-hmm.
And just her slow build from there, it's an interesting little story about a music artist that most people probably do not know anything about.
Yeah, well, I guess country music people do, obviously.
Yeah.
But she isn't as prevalent in the zeitgeist as she used to be, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know. Because
there was a time in the 80s, she did like commercials. She was so popular.
True, but now like Patsy Cline, who is her best friend on some mm-hmm. level in the movie,
mm-hmm.
still has relevance because you will hear her tunes being played on popular radio or adult contemporary or something like that every once and again. Whereas Loretta's, not so much. I couldn't tell you a single time I've ever heard it outside of a country station.
There haven't been that many of Loretta's that crossed over into pop mainstream.
Yeah.
Like hardly any.
And now she's considered like kind of on some level classic country.
Yeah, she is.
So she's not going to make it on a pop country station.
Nope.
So it's even further down the rabbit hole of country music to find her movie and explore it.
Yeah.
Not movie, but music rather.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, like it's on the outset, I remember when I saw it, I didn't think it was going to be any good. Just like, I don't really care about this story. And it starts off and you think it's going to be this slow plotting thing, but I enjoy the pace of it. And, it's a story that I did not know on some level before that. So yeah, that is my number six.
Okay. My number seven is La Bamba.
Yeah. I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so I can't give you an honest assessment.
Yeah, well, being Latino for me, man, this is one, like you were saying, like for you, the Nashville stuff. For me, this is one I come back to all the time because it's just incredible. I don't know, man. It still holds up. I saw it again maybe 3 months ago, full on like HDNet, one of those channels, all the way through. Just so enjoyable, man.
What nationality is Lou Diamond Phillips?
Well, he's half Mexican.
Okay.
So yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Because he could also pass for like Southeast Asian on some level. If you told me like, oh, he's actually Filipino or he's actually.
You could see Filipino. I could see that. Yeah.
Something like that. I'd be like, I don't know. You could be a bunch of different.
He was half Mexican. I think half white, half Mexican. And the story goes into that, right? Because his older brother was full Mexican.
Okay.
His mom had first husband who was full Mexican, and then Steve was the stepfather who came in and raised them. And so, but Lou Diamond Phillips is a career. He doesn't have a career without this movie. This is a career making.
And it's
movie.
So weird. You see this movie and you're like,
oh, this guy.
Yeah. Through the roof.
Yep.
Should be. Did Young Guns.
Did.
It did better for other people in Young Guns than it did for him.
Yeah. Emilio Estevez pretty much. And Kiefer Sutherland.
And Kiefer Sutherland and Charlie Sheen.
Right. And then you saw Dermot Mulroney, who ends up still working nowadays. Yeah.
More so than Lou Diamond.
That's for sure.
Everyone's going to see like a random cover or some straight to DVD like B movie, like Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Where's Lou been?
He was on this TV series Wolf Creek for a little while. I think he's on Longmire, that Netflix show that's on there.
I haven't seen season two of that yet.
Yeah. I think he's on there. He goes on there and he's on for like two or three seasons. Yeah. Katie Sackhoff's on that show or she comes on eventually. In that film, he is playing Richie Valenzuela, if you know the real name of the guy. And it's his progression from like being this like this young kid rocker who's got this like ambition and this drive and this belief in himself that's instilled from his mom, right? His mom is she believes in him so much at times to the detriment of his brothers, played by Isai Morales, who's great in the film. The late Elizabeth Pena plays Morales' wife. Who gets involved in the situation, but you see him progress through the whole thing from this like high school kid who becomes this rocker and becomes famous and how it like threatens the delicate relationships that are in the family already and exposes stuff. And Lou Diamond kind of grows up in the movie. It's really fun to see him become from the high school kid to become like this guy who wants to, he's on the cusp of being an adult. And unfortunately, like with Buddy Holly, he dies in that plane crash.
Tragically.
In
Iowa, in the middle, I think it was Iowa.
Yeah, somewhere. Something like that. And they show the sequence, where they flip the coin and how it all happened and who got into the plane, who didn't.
Yeah, there was one. Who were the ones that didn't?
I think Willie is one of the people that didn't, if I remember correctly. Willie Nelson.
Okay.
Yeah, there was like two or three people that didn't get on that plane who missed out on getting on that plane who end up – who end up going on and living and having careers and shit like this.
But yeah,
like
for decades thereafter.
Exactly, yeah. But it's a great, fun, enjoyable movie. The rock stuff works. And it's a good exploration of this side of the culture, of the Mexican or the Chicano culture in America and what special experiences they have becoming a rock superstar, and how they have to like not lose their connection to their culture and their heritage.
Sure.
And that's really powerful, because Isai Morales is his really full connection to his Mexican heritage, mm-hmm. where there's, you know, obviously Joey Pantoliano plays his manager. That's more of the white rock and roll thing. So it's that combo that works throughout the movie. And of course he has his girlfriend. I can't remember. Obviously it's Donna. Her name's Donna, but I can't remember the actress's name. Danielle something. And so all of that as it progresses, and Luis Valdez did the movie. So to me, there's just so much about it that I come back to all the time. It still holds up. It's a great rock and roll biopic movie. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it as a kid a lot.
Yeah.
And then Los Lobos, that song was huge. I remember watching that video a billion times.
Yep. And that's a great soundtrack, because they did all the Richie's music, and then they had people come in and redo other stuff.
Los Lobos has a career to this day because of how big the soundtrack was.
All right, then my number six is Straight Outta Compton.
That's a punt.
Okay, fair enough.
That's a punt.
Number five is – oh, yes, sir, your turn.
My number five is probably not going to be on your list.
Okay.
And I had to look up a specific aspect of it. Behind the Candelabra.
What? That's an HBO movie, man.
It got released in the States, a theatrical release, and got theatrically released in the UK. Plus, it debuted at the Cannes Film Festival. It debuted at Cannes.
All right.
How is that not a film?
I'll accept it.
There is no accept. I made sure I looked it up. It got international release and was debuted at Cannes.
You're ridiculous.
Or Cannes, or however the fuck
Cannes!
You
say. Cannes!
That is not ridiculous. That fits the definition of a theatrical.
It's not even a biopic.
What are you talking about?
It's a chronicle of their relationship. It's not a chronicle of him becoming a Liberace. He's already Liberace when the film starts.
Well, okay. How's that? Yeah, but you're talking about like a slice in time. We're going to get to another one that's not a biopic then under that, because it doesn't go over the full scope of the individual's life.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a biopic in that, like, this is what happened in his life from X to Y.
Yeah. It's a good film, though. It's a good film.
It's really good.
Yeah.
And it's, you know.
To me, it's a HBO movie, so I didn't put it on here, but I respect your logic.
It got theatrically released.
I respect your logic.
Theatrically released.
It's fair.
It got offered to Weinstein, and he turned it down, and then afterwards said, I should have released that. I just heard Damon talking about that on Bill Simmons' podcast.
That was a great interview, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
That one with the John C. Reilly was a good one, too, over the last couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoyed – Damon's was just – that was a
– It was, because they already knew each other.
Yep.
Whereas Reilly, like when – you know, I've heard him with other celebrities.
Yeah.
He's trying to show that he's a fan but not show that he's a fan, and it's a weird road or line to walk.
Yeah. I like how Marin does it better.
Okay.
I do. But I like Simmons. Don't get me wrong. Simmons is the whole reason.
But with Damon, they already had a somewhat of a past. Yeah. Not a lot of past, but it gave them some sort of commonality.
Yeah, plus they're Boston boys.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But he talked about it in that. And
he did.
Broke down the reason as to why it was tough for them to find distribution, just because, like, listen, I need a $200 million movie, not a $10 million movie. I need something that's going to do a billion at the box office, not 100. Although 10 to get 100 back, that's a good investment.
It's not a bad investment.
It's not. But it's Liberace. It's one of those things of when I was a kid, I just assumed Liberace was gay.
Yeah.
And
we didn't know.
Yeah. The fact that everybody was just like, here he is. Here's a spread with him in OK Magazine with his girlfriend.
Yep.
And you're like, wait a second.
We didn't know. I'm telling you, I grew up during that time. We didn't know. Like, it was like – and I was a kid during that time, but – his concerts were like huge events on TV. I remember my mom sitting me down with my dad, like sitting me down to watch Liberace on television. And no, not even once. And my dad was not the biggest fan of the homosexual lifestyle. My dad never once was like, oh, that guy's gay. Never once, until it finally came out years later and we had the conversation about it. But like when I was a kid, you had to watch Liberace. It was a huge deal, man.
It's so big. Name me another piano player that you know the name of from the 1970s.
No.
And 60s.
Elton John. That's it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, didn't sing.
Right.
Just played motherfucking piano.
Yeah.
That's all he did, and wore a lot of jewelry and spangly stuff, and he had to add glitz and glamour to the fact that he's just twiddling some – doing it beautifully.
Yeah.
And the orchestration and whatnot that goes into the pieces, because they CGI'd – Douglas's his face onto the guy that I think he ran the Liberace Museum,
Wow.
else, like,
yeah,
but basically was if there was ever going to be any kind of Broadway music or something, this is the only dude that could actually play all the pieces and do the part and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to watch, that's all a real individual playing all of that. You're like, this is crazy. Like, he was insanely talented.
Yeah.
So I don't fault the reason that you knew his name. But at the same time, find me another piano player.
No.
That even span beyond that, because I knew him as a kid and I never watched him perform, really.
The only one I know is Victor Borga, who was like the funny piano player.
Yeah.
He did it, but it wasn't the same thing.
I discovered him long after.
Yeah.
Liberace, I knew as a kid.
Yeah.
Victor, I was in my 20s before I heard the name. And it's like a PBS thing and they're giving away.
You saw the infomercials. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For his
and now with YouTube, you can go watch his stuff if you want to.
Don't have to buy a DVD.
You don't. Well, I would never have bought it anyway because I didn't grow up with him. So the idea of paying $50 for one DVD in a tote bag to support PBS for this, I'll wait for the Eagles reunion show. I'll wait for the whatever else they're giving away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although I don't think I ever, because I don't even know if they do those anymore. Do they?
They do the drives, yeah.
They still do it?
They still do them.
That's sad.
There's still old people in America who don't pay that shit, dog.
That's sad, though. I mean, how much is their operating budget that they still have to beg for donations?
Well, that's a public television station, man. That's just kind of how it works.
It is.
They do get some federal funding, obviously.
They do.
It's a huge thing.
But why what could their potential operating budget be that we couldn't cut into
our other defense spending? Yeah. Trust me, I know. It's ridiculous.
If we took 1% away from defense spending, we could pay for all kinds of things.
We wouldn't have that in the Outlaw Nation. Let me tell you that right now. PBS would be very well funded in Outlaw Nation. Just,
the amount of money we spend on defense in this country
is madness.
It is. It is utterly like, man, Dwight was not wrong with the military-industrial complex.
Yeah. Eisenhower, yeah.
Yeah. Because
agreed.
We've escalated and every administration keeps pushing it.
Yeah, because so many people are employed by it.
Uh-huh.
If it wasn't so many people employed by it, there's no way we'd still be doing this stupid bullshit. There's just no way.
And it's something voters are willing to accept spending vast amounts of money on.
Yep, and contractors try to get in because they know they can rape the government. They can overcharge for shit. Yep.
Yeah, it's brutal. Welcome to the U.S. politics this week.
Anyway.
Top 10 things that bother you about the U.S. government spending habits.
And don't come at me because I served in the military. If you didn't serve in the military, you can kiss my fucking ass. You can try to tell me about the military-industrial complex. I served from the inside out. Anyway, so
that would probably be our number one, by the way.
Liberace.
Top 10 things of we wish the government wouldn't spend so much money on.
Yep.
That's our number one. If we ever get to that, if this show's around in 50 years,
that'll
be
the new
top 10 things of which, by the way, if you haven't heard on the last Thunderdome and you're a Patreon member, we're gonna switch it up.
Yeah.
And so if you're a Patreon member, head over there. You can find an email address and that we're using to basically we're taking all ideas from Patreon members about potential replacements for Thunderdome. But we already have some good ones we like, but keep them coming.
Yeah.
Keep them coming. We're gonna do a rotation, we think, of shows potentially.
Yep.
We're
going to dance around.
But yeah, behind the candelabra is, it's a weird character portrayal of an individual that I knew is one way. And you see the behind the scenes of the type of narcissism, what goes into that, and the predatory habits of the man.
Yeah.
The new young thing comes around and he's suddenly wandering eye.
Mm-hmm.
And you see all the jealous guys that get displaced. Like, it makes sense.
It's very interesting.
You thought you had your meal ticket and your meal ticket is now, cashing your chip in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how hurt they are, and they even push the limit on making. I don't know if it did for you, but making me feel okay, like in certain moments where they're like, "This is going to happen."
Yeah,
we're about to have some sex that I may not be fully comfortable with watching.
Oh yeah,
they don't show, but they like basically you're experiencing it in the room with the two of these individuals on some level.
You are,
and it's. It's one of those things of I've seen the other version a billion times.
Yeah.
There should be representation for that.
Yeah, of course.
A loving couple and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I appreciated the fact that they didn't try and pull punches there. They didn't just gloss over the sexual side of this because that's how these two people discovered each other.
Exactly. Exactly. You're right. They don't pull any punches and they show you the relationship. They don't – and it isn't done for shock value or exposition. It just is what it is.
Yeah. And the de-evolution of Matt Damon's character as he gets more into drugs and sacrifices parts of his identity for the relationship and the love that he has for Liberace. And
I feel like he's working the bones of Wahlberg and Boogie Nights. Like you could make correlations between these two guys. You can make correlations.
Okay.
Yeah. I just feel like there's something there.
All right, so that's my five.
So is it my five now?
Uh-huh.
Ray.
Okay.
Which is Pun from Earl, so you guessed correctly, yeah. I really enjoy this movie, man, and it holds up still. I still go back and watch. I know people bash the movie because they think it's a caricature that Jamie Foxx is doing, but I challenge you to do anything as well and as effectively as Jamie Foxx does in this movie with Ray Charles. It's what Kilmer does with Morrison, in my opinion. It is just as powerful, just as believable. You forget you're watching an actor and you think you're watching Ray Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an incredible performance from him, man. And it's the reason he still has a career, to be honest with you. I think that film really shows you the range of Jamie Foxx as an actor.
Every once again, he'll chime in like on your Baby Drivers or your Dreamgirls.
Yeah, sure.
And stuff like that. But then he also does Annie. And he does
right.
Things in between, or the Shazam show, or whatever the hell that thing is.
The Shazam show.
What is the one where you got to beat the program?
Right,
you
he's hosting the app. A game show host, right. Which, like, is so weird. Like, what are you doing hosting a game show?
He does all that.
Just produce it, make your money.
I believe still has the ability to come back and give me something on film.
Yeah, Collateral, man. He's fantastic in Collateral. So, you know.
He just had an interesting career, to say the least.
Yeah. I mean, who thought that this guy who was playing that weird woman on In Living Color in drag with the
– Shanae was Martin, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. With the big butt and everything like that.
Yeah,
like,
the huge duck lips.
Yeah, he was like,
crossed eyes.
That person was going to end up and win an Oscar. Like, that's crazy. For best actor, not just like a supporting, best actor. And so, you know, and you see it in the film, all through the film. It's inescapable. And I think Taylor Hackford does a really good job directing this movie and showing it as it goes from him, like, you know, being dirt poor, slowly going blind as a child, and how he has to negotiate his world step by step, piece by piece. Because at first you feel sympathy for him because he's blind and all these people are taking advantage of him. So you understand later on in the film when he's more of a hard ass, when he's more like wanting to control his career because so many people have tried to take control away from his life that he now will not let anybody do that. And so at times it's a bit harsh. And of course he's a womanizer, so it threatens his family. The drug stuff is really well done here. They don't shirk away from that responsibility of showing it.
Yeah, and it's womanizing.
Yeah, all of that, you know, and what it could cost him with Kerry Washington playing his wife. And
what, Regina Hall is his mistress?
Yeah, Regina Hall's one of the mistresses, right. You know, she's the one that throws that brick through the – it's fantastic.
Yeah, when they get to the scene where they record Georgia and the people are questioning what he's doing and he's making, you know, music for white people.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, and you're like, nah, man, he's making a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's that thing will stand the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive because it's still, it utterly sounds timeless because of the strings and just the simple, calming melodies that comes in. And, and I've been to Georgia, but it almost makes me wish I had grown up in Georgia.
The song does,
but yeah, just because it's like, wow, the amount of love you have for the place that you grew up, even though that place wasn't the greatest or wasn't the most fostering of you or your family or people you knew.
Yeah.
And you still managed to create this just beautiful song for it.
Thoroughly beautiful. And, and you see his progression, right? Not just, as I was saying, from dirt poor to famous or all stuff he goes, but like you see him have these really great moments like with Stephen Schiff with where they're the producers that help him.
It's Richard Schiff.
Richard Schiff, yeah. Him and Curtis Armstrong, how they play the producers who help him through that and through that time. And then him discovering his stuff and what he's going to do and where he's going to go and his music, and then confronting the anger within his own community that he's using gospel as his foundation for this rock and roll / R&B music. Yeah, you're corrupting what gospel is supposed to be about. You now you're turning into sex music, right? That kind of stuff. So you see, it wasn't a clean journey. And this is what sometimes we get caught up in and thinking these heroes have these like really squeaky clean journeys to the top. And I love that this biopic doesn't show that.
Yeah, it shows him. Well, the thing is there's too much – we know too much about him to paint him in a rosy, fully rosy perspective.
Well, it didn't stop Michael Mann from doing that in Ali, which really pissed me off. Like, I hated that they did that in Ali. They didn't try to make him a fucking hero from first second to last second. And I was like, bullshit. Show him for who he really fucking was. He is a hero, absolutely. But he was also a pretty shitty guy to some people.
Yeah, they showed some of his womanizing.
Yeah, some of his womanizing. But look at they didn't show anything where he called Joe Frazier a gorilla, which essentially reinforced the stereotype against black people.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, when fuck.
I mean, to sell tickets.
Yeah.
To boost the box office.
Yeah.
But at the same time, took it to a point where this was all fun and games, and now this is hurtful.
Yeah.
And his opponents, especially Frazier, after a while, I was like, I thought we were friends.
Yeah, yeah. And Frazier helped him out at a time when he had no money and he was like excommunicated from boxing because of his stance against Vietnam. But none of that gets explored. It's a little frustrating how we create Ali to be this hero.
He was lionized.
Yeah, he was lionized. But there's you don't lose the lionization if you show him for what he really was and is and still became this symbol for people. Like, mm-hmm. It still matters what he did, even though he was kind of shitty at times. Who isn't? And then eventually becomes what he – like the Rumble in the Jungle is so powerful because of where he's at in his life. He is possibly too old to beat this beast, this behemoth, and yet he finds a way, and that matters. That's why When We Were Kings is such a great doc, because it shows you that. But you can't have that enjoyment without also seeing these other parts of him, because if you lionize him, he stops being human, and then it's impossible to connect to him or relate to him if you take away the
humanity.
He
becomes a tall tale, a
fable. Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's more about telling like a moralistic example as opposed to actually conveying who the individual was.
Exactly. Anyway, so Ray. Watch Ray when you can. It's good.
Please do. My four is a punt from you earlier, okay. Straight out of Compton.
Oh, okay, cool.
It's look, they were – when I was a kid, there's nothing against the acts that came before them, because they might have been genuinely, you know, from – had lived a life that they were speaking of. And I know they did, like Eric B. and Rakim or, you know, some other earlier acts. But when NWA came out when I was a kid, that seemed like the realest – representation to this white kid at that time from Midwest type of area. Mm-hmm. It's like, holy shit. Like, that is inner city, hardcore. This dude is, you know, so rough around the edges. All these guys are.
Yeah.
And see the backstory of them and make it so compelling that even my parents could watch it.
Yeah.
I was blown away because I figured when they announced it, I was like, well, shit, this is for basically people that like rap and hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, younger generations that like rap and hip hop, and those of us that grew up with them,
that
know them. But it's not for somebody that looked back and was like, ah, that music isn't for me. That's kid shit. Like when they were in their 40s or whatever else when this came out.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it just made a compelling movie about these pioneers of a new genre of music.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that kind of picked themselves up by the bootstraps and got themselves out of a terrible situation, and how the system corrupted.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, Eazy-E, how Eazy was so willing to screw over his bandmates.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, technically he's not wrong, but the way you went about all this is pretty shitty.
Exactly.
And I understand, like, when I was younger and they split up, I was like, what is this, man?
Yeah.
And I was always on the Ice Cube side.
Sure.
Because he made my – I preferred his music over Eazy's independent stuff.
Yeah.
And Dre wasn't doing all that much. So I was always with Cube.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I got older and found out why they all broke up and what led to the discord, and to see that brought to life in Celluloid was really fascinating for me. I love the opening too. It sets the scene of Eazy in that drug house or whatever else.
Yeah.
And the it was when I was a kid, seeing raids like that on the nightly news when I watched with my dad was something I'd see out today in Los Angeles, or it was mainly out of Los Angeles. I don't remember. Maybe out of Houston or somewhere else. Yeah. But it wasn't New York. It wasn't Chicago. It wasn't anywhere like that. And to see it opening like bam, and I just assumed that was a true story because why else put it in?
Yeah.
And love the authenticity and the fact that here's a nice little bit of action that actually – get it out of the way.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Because we don't need to rely on that later on.
Yeah. We don't need to build our thing on that. Yeah.
But to just show you the street and the environment and atmosphere that he was growing up in. And they all were.
Yeah. I thoroughly agree, man. It holds up in rewatching. I think it falls apart a little bit near the end of the film. For me, it becomes a little too – like what we just said about Ali – we don't get into the ugliness of Dre and Eazy and Cube when they went against Eazy-E.
Yeah.
There was some ugly shit said.
There was.
And they kind of shirk away from it, probably because those guys were both involved in the movie, so they didn't want to come off too bad.
Yeah.
So, okay, I get that, but the film itself is fantastic, and it's a really ballsy film from F. Gary Gray. You get this like you said, the beginning scene, but there's more, like that black cop making him get on the ground, that scene as well. That's I like about the movie is it doesn't shy away from these really uncomfortable shit that was going on to black young black men, and some and still going on at times in certain communities to young black men who are trying to do what they're trying to do in their world. And that rap is not a respectable thing in society, right?
If yeah, especially
they,
at that time.
Yeah, they wouldn't do this to five lawyers who were sitting around in a room somewhere and came out, and they wouldn't put them all on the ground like they did with these guys because they're dressed in their gangster stuff. They put them down on the ground and whatever, mm-hmm. and has that situation. But I think it does a great job of showing you why they were a family too, why they came together, why they support each other. You know, Dre's brother gets killed and it's like, well, that really brings me even tighter.
Yeah.
So that when the break happens as the film goes on, you feel a tragedy about it, you know, mm-hmm. because they were a family and then money gets in the way. One dude thinking he's above the rest of the group. Jerry Heller kind of supposed allegedly because he tried to sue the movie allegedly, kind of wormed his way in to try to separate Eazy-E from the rest of the guys and give him the money because he could control that guy and control the other guys and pay them less. But it's great performances.
Yeah, well, he owned the rights to they didn't realize what they were getting themselves into. Yeah. It's just such a shitty thing to do.
Exactly. That's the music business, man. They fuck you over left and right, dog.
Yeah, but it's so short-sighted though.
Mm-hmm.
I guess at the time you're doing that, you don't realize you're going to change the culture.
Yeah.
Because the long-term bet is staying together because then you could be the Rolling Stones. You could be like one of those bands that or groups that sticks together for 50 years and has $1 million property year in, year out for you.
Yeah.
Just no matter what you do, boom, I'm making X.
Yeah.
Because we've been around. We've just become so much a part of everybody's life.
Yeah.
I love in the lead up to it that Cube got his son to play.
Yeah, O'Shea Jackson.
Yeah. And then Easy's son was like, well, only I can play Easy. And basically – everybody's like, nah, fam. That one's not happening. That one is not happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ice Cube's got juice.
Yep.
And he's helping produce this.
Yeah.
You want to put O'Shea in? I'm sure O'Shea's good. We can coach him up and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Enjoy the payday.
And O'Shea is good, man.
He's really good.
Yeah.
He is the spitting image of his father.
He really is. It's unsettling how close to his father he is.
I know. I mean, there are differences, but at the same time, it's like, you are definitely Ice Cube's son. Yeah.
And Curtis Hawkins does a great job.
As Dre,
yeah. And Jason Mitchell does play Eazy-E.
And it's Giamatti?
Yeah, Giamatti's as Heller, yeah.
As the scummy record label.
Jerry Heller, yeah.
Manager, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, yeah. All of it. But you're right, Matt. This group, you know, I was in my 20s when this group blew up, and it was like – it was a transition in rap from these crowd pleasers of the 80s, like Run DMC and, you know, LL Cool J.
More party music.
Right. And you know, trying to become mainstream, trying to be accepted by the white community. They saw there was money there to be had. Of course, we're not talking about Africa Mbambada and all these guys from fucking, you know, Grandmaster Flash, all these guys from the street who had originated rap. We're talking about the mainstream guys.
But even
guys.
Rap at that time was... it was more sing-songy. Like, you still got the...
Right. Vanilla Ice is 91. So you've got that time where it's transitioning, right? It's become... Hammer.
Pop at that point.
In Hammer, too.
Hammer
it's becoming
pop.
Too pop. And then out of nowhere comes the gangster rap, which is NWA, Ice-T. Obviously, eventually, Ice Cube when he separates out. So many gangster rappers were coming out talking about what was going on in the community.
Well, then it goes, you know... Ghetto Boys?
Yeah, the Ghetto Boys as well, yeah. It gets hardcore, man.
What's his name? The short dude with the glass eye in Ghetto Boys. What was his name?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, man. Why can I not remember? He had the best. He was like the only memorable name in it. Damn
Mine's
it.
Mine's playing tricks on me, man. I love that song. My Mind's playing tricks on me.
Oh, yeah. Like Too Short.
Yeah, Too Short came out. Yeah, exactly.
I listened to a lot of Too Short back in the day. Shorty the Pimp. I've heard that song thousands of times.
Yeah, Too Short was the shit, dog.
I still know that bass line. It reminds me of my buddy Robbie's car. Because that's what he was the first guy to have a license,
right?
So right around his T-top Camaro,
yeah,
with the glass panels off, music way too loud to where it's deafening, and you get out and your ears are ringing. Be like, whatever, you're the only dude with a car right now, so I will listen to this. A bunch of rap, and then he would visit family down in Florida, so then he'd get this like underground Florida rap, and try and convince us all that it was good. None of us bought into that, and then he had a weird fascination with the Offspring.
Oh, the Offspring, really?
Out of nowhere. Offspring got played way too loud. I hate the Offspring.
Yeah, that is strange.
I hate the Offspring. They're the worst. It's the same fucking song over and over and over again. Generic cookie cutter punk.
Yeah.
It's the worst. and to hear that at like 150 decibels.
Yeah.
No, thank you. But you got to keep them separated. Oh, God, dude, put a gun in my mouth.
I know. And then it sparks these movies about, because you get Boys in the Hood, you get Colors. Menace to Society, South Central.
South Central.
You get all these inner city movies that
are parodies of that. Don't be a menace to South Central while you're drinking your juice in the hood.
Fucking wins. Listen, I'm going to tell you something
right now. It's not a bad parody, though.
It's
got its moments.
I've never liked any of the Wayans stuff.
When the Wayans sister comes out and she's the histrionics, oh, I'm a baby.
Yeah.
And she's doing cartwheels through the street. I think it ends up not being her kid. She's like, oh, okay. Well, just walks away.
Yeah.
There's a message when Keenan keeps popping in. It's got its moments where it's good satire of those films.
I'm glad we're almost done with all of them. I didn't like any of the Wayne stuff, honestly. But Living Color was good.
I got a soft spot for Damon.
Do you?
I have a soft spot for Damon.
Yeah, so anyway, that I guess that's the film. That's good. Yeah? Are we good? Okay.
That was my four. What's your four?
What's Love Got to Do with It, which is the punt from earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. I really like that movie, man. And I think it's a – you know, I just have a soft spot for Angela Bassett. That's basically what it is, because I think she should have been the first African-American woman to win Best Actress, like not Best Supporting Actress, like God, my name escapes me.
Best Lead
from
Actress?
Gone with the Wind. Who's that? From
Gone. Oh, shit.
I know. Dan,
I know who you're talking about.
I forget who it is. Anyway.
I can picture her.
Yeah. Hattie McDaniel. Hattie McDaniel, okay. She won for Gone with the Wind. But Halle Berry won Best Actress for Monsters Ball.
It's fine.
Yeah, I guess.
It's fine.
But what Angela Bassett does in What's Love Got to Do with It is incredible.
Yeah.
It's absolutely incredible in bringing someone who is larger than life already in Tina Turner even more to life, and then finding the vulnerability and the softness to her and the humanity to her as she progresses through this
brutal
thing.
Scenes.
Yeah. Very brutal scenes.
Brutal scenes.
Lawrence Fishburne as Ike Turner is just – those scenes are so fucking hard to watch, yet – you're watching two actors with an incredible amount of trust with each other do these scenes because they are so real. They're so real that you're just like, my God.
Dude, when,
how can someone possibly stay in a relationship like this?
Yeah, it's the late 70s and he's coked out of his mind.
Yeah.
And she's singing some song I've never heard before, but she wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
And he tells her, like, you're not doing it right. You got to, you know, you got to give it to me like some weird 70s terminology that I'd never heard before.
Yeah.
And he tells everybody to leave and he goes in there and chokes her and then in essence rapes her.
Yep.
And the look of terror and the fact that she resigns herself, like it is so real.
Yeah.
It's so real. Like the acting on that level from both of them, the commitment is stellar.
Yeah.
The reason it's lower on my list is I don't know how often I'll go back to watch it.
Oh, really?
Because the moments –
I get that. They're difficult.
Yeah. The whole time you're watching, you're like, just get the fuck out of this.
Yeah.
You're Tina Turner.
Yeah.
But you don't know that you're, you know.
Right. But that's the point of the movie, though, is to show you that even someone as famous as she can get caught up in a relationship
and
like
this. And be paralyzed.
And be paralyzed, be unable to get out of it, you know, and not run to the authorities and report every single time it fucking happens, because that's the realistic thing of life is that you don't actually get to do that every time. Not a lot of people can do that, that they have to suffer, unfortunately, until they find their strength to get the hell out of a situation like that.
Oh, yeah, she shows up at that Ramada.
Oh, man.
And he's like, listen, I'm Tina Turner. And her face is beat six ways to Sunday.
Yeah.
Because
she's finally fought back, too. Like, he beats her even harder to try to stop her, but
she stands up.
Yep, she stands up.
Yeah, Cook kicks him straight in the nuts.
Yeah, man.
And she's like, I don't have – I think she had like a 76 card or something on her
And
like change.
Yeah.
And that's it. And the guy was just like, you can have a room.
Yeah.
You can have a room. Right. Like, I don't even know what you say. That's some of the best acting from an actor I never saw.
Yeah.
Because the look on his face is just like, like, I don't even know what to say. Of course you can have a room. You want extra stuff in the fridge for free? Like, I don't know. How can I help? You just want a room? Sure.
Yeah.
We have a hotel car.
Yeah.
You're welcome to have the hotel. I don't know what else.
Yeah.
Please, extra pillows, blankets. I'll do it all.
Yeah.
Because I would feel paralyzed in that moment too.
Of course.
Because you don't want
to help.
Yeah. And you don't want to be like, do you want me to call the cops?
Right.
But you want to be like, do you want me to call the cops? Like, I want to try and help you in your situation, but I don't know what your situation is, and who am I to be presumptive of?
Yeah.
So you're coming in here and this is all you're asking for. Trust me, I got rooms. I'll kick somebody out. I'll refund them their money.
Yeah.
It's fine. Worst case, you can sleep in the office.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's brutal. It's for that reason. I just don't know if I can go back.
That's fair.
It's good.
I go back to watch it because she's such a great actress in it, and that's because it isn't all just beatings. Like the whole film isn't just beatings. There are some really great moments between her and how she's finding her voice, right? Between her and her situation with her mom, and how she, you know, just completely changes as she goes along and finds her strength. And it's a great journey that you're on with her. But you're right, Matt. Those are just some really tough scenes to get through. Very tough scenes to get through.
And like the first whooping she takes that we see, at least, she's swimming in the pool, and there's the backup singers, ostensibly her friends, are swimming with her in the pool.
Yeah.
And then they all hear her and they, what am I supposed to do? I am now paralyzed in this situation. Mm-hmm. I want to intervene, but at the same time, A, it's a different time, so it's not my place.
Right.
But B, that dude is my boss.
Yeah, my meal ticket. Yeah, exactly.
Like I don't eat tomorrow unless I cash a paycheck that he issues.
Exactly.
So it's a brutal place to be.
Yeah. Those who've been in that situation should never opine about that situation. All right. Anyway, what's your number three?
Three is Walk the Line.
Ooh, that's a punt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Slight punt though, right? Like we said. Then my number three is my cheat. I think it's a cheat. 8 Mile.
That's my number two.
Okay. I think it's a cheat because it's not technically – his name is not technically Eminem.
Bullshit.
But it pretty much is his life story, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is. Yeah. I nobody looks at that as anything other than a unofficial, official autobiography of Eminem.
Yeah, exactly.
A.k.a. Marshall Mathers, right. A.k.a. What the hell is this? It's not Cheddar Bob. What is his nickname in it? Rabbit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rabbit is another pseudonym for Eminem.
Yeah.
That movie is 100% about him.
Yeah. And we had to take it off our top five Collider biopics because it isn't officially Eminem.
You guys did the wrong thing. You did the wrong. I don't know what else is in the discussion.
I'll not have you insult the company within the company walls, damn it. But yeah, it was
whatever they did. They don't pay me for this show. I can say whatever I want.
It was a conversation that we had, and I wanted to include it, but in the end, I was overruled because it's not an actual biopic of the person, even though it's a biopic in essence.
It is 100% a biopic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is about Eminem's life, him growing up in a trailer on 8 Mile, of all places, in Detroit.
In Detroit.
The underground rap scene.
Yep.
Having a delusional mother.
Yeah, Kim Basinger.
Yeah, that is hopped up on all kinds of different hormones. Not saying they're synthetic, that her brain chemistry is all over the place. What does she have? Munchausen syndrome?
Yeah,
or something
Munchausen,
like that?
I think is what it is. Yeah.
Baron
Munchausen syndrome.
Yeah, I was about to say, or is that Baron von Munchausen? I'm just screwing up the two things.
Yeah.
And she's this, I don't want to say psychotic, but unhinged individual.
Right.
And the interactions, it's fucking Eminem story.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and fight me, people. Come through the digital.
I really doubt anybody will fight
Come through the spikers. Come through the spikers. I don't even know what accent that is. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. It's such a good film. And of course, it is essentially a biopic, like Matt said. Even Mekhi Phifer's character is a real person in Eminem's life who passed away.
It's Obie Trice.
Yeah, Obie Trice. He passed away, what, like a year or two ago? Or was he murdered or something?
I think it was a few years longer than
that. Was it? Okay. But I know he passed away or was killed or something happened with him. And
yeah, I think he passed away like suddenly.
Yeah.
If memory serves, it's one of those things of he got diagnosed with something and it was kind of like a – it was terminal.
Yeah.
It was late stage, whatever. I don't know that it was cancer, but it was just like, you have this.
Right.
And you don't have much, you know, time on this earth.
Right.
Like, okay. And then he expired or passed away, however you'd like to say it, shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
I could be fucking up all of that.
No.
But I think that's about what it is.
Yeah, but you have a great performance from Eminem, who doesn't act, by the way. Eminem does not.
And I love that he is like, this is my one and done.
Yep.
Telling my biography. In a movie about me.
So why didn't he even name himself?
I don't know.
It's a right.
Maybe to take a specific license or to speed up a timeline here.
Yeah,
maybe just didn't want to be inauthentic.
Yeah, or maybe didn't want to get sued by his mom or something.
That's true.
Hey, you use my name.
They were
betraying
in court.
Me. Yeah.
You have to pay her. So if we just change it,
right?
Plus, This gave one of the greatest soundtrack songs.
Oh, fuck yes.
Of all time.
By the way, I found out recently that is the first hip-hop song to win Best Song.
Wow, really?
I thought it was The Hustler.
Way to give it to a white artist, baby. There we go. You want your representation with La Bamba? I want mine. 4 Grammys for hell white artists in a predominantly black genre.
I thought it was the Pimp Song from Hustle and Flow.
That won the Oscar.
That then I'm saying. You Lose Yourself won the Oscar too, but it won the Oscar first. It was the first hip-hop song to win an Oscar. Then the Pimp Song came after. Isn't that the Pimp Song? What's the song? What's that song? Whoop That Trick, I think is what it's called.
Okay. Yeah, I know it's by 3-6 Mafia.
Yeah, 3-6 Mafia.
Because then the joke was there after how many Oscars do 3-6 Mafia – between 3-6 Mafia and Martin Scorsese have? 1. It's just like – you got to be fucking kidding me. 3-6 Mafia has an Oscar and Martin Scorsese does not.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, so right, and the his journey is – there's no pulling no punches here, man. The guy was poor as fuck, doing what he could do, feeling like he was lost. They immediately put him in the underdog position from the beginning because he blows it. He has the vomits. He blows it.
He's a white guy entering into a world that no one identifies with you.
Yep, and they're like choke.
Yeah. You have to win over the crowd because they hate you just on principle on some level.
Yeah.
Which I don't blame him because Detroit is not the best place to grow up. It seems exceedingly hardscrabble. I mean – it appears as though they're bouncing back, but at the same time, like, you know, it almost looks like what from the pictorials from like 5, 6, 7 years ago when the economic downturn hit, and then the fallout from that reminded me of when they'd have cameras back into New Orleans after Katrina.
Oh yeah,
and just these destroyed neighborhoods, except Detroit was an utter lack of economy, and once the big automakers could no longer employ the huge populace, and you just drive through these neighborhoods of squatters live in that house. This one's been condemned.
Yeah.
That's a lot next to a lot next to a – yeah, somebody lives there next to squatters next to – it just looked brutal. And to grow up in that type of urban squalor is a unique situation for somebody in this country.
Yeah, agreed.
And to fight your way out of that – and to do it in this, like, you had to battle life, and now you have to battle at the one thing you actually think you're good at and enjoy in life.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that gives someone the confidence in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have a sense of self and identity overcoming what seems to be nothing. Like, so what? You rapped in front of people.
Yeah.
But most people's fear is public speaking.
Yes.
Which you and I don't have.
No.
But the majority of people listening to us have.
Well, to be fair, I'm sure we both have nerves about it, but we don't have paralyzing or crippling fear about it.
I don't think I really do at this
really? Point. Wow. Okay. I still do. Like going on to a live event for the Schmodown, I am super nervous before it happens. I think because it's a competition, right?
That's not public speaking, though. Yeah.
Right. That's a good point.
When you're doing the outlaw character, that's more public speaking.
Yeah.
When we do this show live, this is more public speaking.
True.
Stuff like that. Whenever you acted.
Yeah. So maybe not so much. I still get nervous, I suppose. But
yeah. Because you get nervous because it's a game.
Yeah.
The element of you want to do well and what are the questions going to be and because you don't know how the next half hour of your life is going to go.
It's very fucking true.
You don't.
Oh, by the way, I'm the Schmodown champion again. Hello.
Oh, is that officially out?
It's officially out by the time this comes out, that's for sure.
When did that come out?
Friday or comes something? Out. Yeah, this past Friday. I beat the beast.
Congratulations.
I did it for us.
I have not seen the show. How'd you beat him?
I beat him in the 5th round. He missed the 5-point question.
Oh, it came down to that.
It came down to that.
Were you done with your questions?
I was.
So he was leading.
He would have tied me. We would have gone to sudden death.
Well, going into that round, who was winning?
He was up by 3. He missed his 3-pointer and the 5, I think.
What
did you
do?
I think that's what happened.
It happens. Like when he and I were teammates, that clueless question.
Oh, yeah.
What's the first and last name of the main character of Clueless?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know Cher's last name. Right. I'm sorry. And he was like, I knew it as soon as they asked. It's like, that's one of those, you know it or you don't.
Right.
Because there's no cue inside my mind about that movie that's going to go, Horowitz. Yeah. Of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's Horowitz.
Nothing in there.
Yeah. And anybody who's complaining about me spoiling it, it's been four or five days. Like, I'm sorry. I don't have time to wait for you.
Yeah. Anybody that's diehard already watched it. Yeah, I'm sure they made reaction videos and all that stuff.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Well, it's a championship match. It's impossible not to.
It's true. It was pretty brutal, man. But Lindley got me focused for it, dude. You know what she does, man? She watched all of Bibbiani's matches and then created a fucking sheet, like a study sheet, a stat sheet of what categories he's good in, not good in. What if he's going to – if you spend opponent's choice – or if he spends opponent's choice, which category to give him, all this kind of – it was fascinating, man. She was like my Mickey, man. She like prepared me for this whole thing. So I owe the entire belt to her, man. She got me –
even with all that preparation, you went into the final round. Three points.
Yeah, because it was just he is a knowledge tree or a wisdom tree of knowledge about movie trivia, man. So it was a tough battle.
I really thought you were going to say he is a beast. I genuinely thought, I was like, ah, here it comes. It's the perfect place to use it.
It's true.
Nope. It's gone.
Well, I felt bad because we'd had that Collider Live segment and I went a little too far in promoting the match and went after him and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I apologized to him on Friday about it when we saw each other, but it was like some people felt a little turned off by that. So if anybody's listening, felt a little turned off by that, I will apologize. It was just a bit too passionate, I think, and that's my fault. That's a lesson for me going forward, though, because, like, you know, there's always that line between reality and fiction, and when you're playing the character, and, you know, you've got to understand there are real feelings involved here sometimes. So that's just a lesson for me going forward.
Yeah, I don't know where it can suddenly cross a line that you didn't know existed.
Exactly. And you just keep going because you're having the battle back.
You're in the moment, and then afterwards, the only person you need to apologize is to Bibbs if he felt –
yeah.
Hey, that was a bit much.
I'm sure he did, so that's why I know we're recording this on a Thursday, but I'm going to find him tomorrow and apologize to him. So.
Well, there have been other moments in the Schmodown, not towards me, towards others, where I'm like, I could see where somebody might take a swing on that one.
Oh, Andrew especially.
Yeah.
That guy walks
I'm thinking
the line.
Of one in particular moment where I told him afterwards, and he was like, fuck, is so-and-so mad? And I was like, well, you know, you kind of did this.
Yeah.
And
you thrusted your penis in his face multiple times.
Yeah, I was going to say, you gesticulated forcefully in his face and then screamed, fuck you, while doing double birds.
Yeah.
I think that could be a little too far.
Yeah, exactly.
And he already knew it, but he needed to hear it kind of thing. I'm not making you feel bad.
Right, right. I'm just telling you the truth.
You're playing a character.
Yeah.
I'm saying from an objective standpoint, especially for a guy that doesn't do this all the time,
right,
you might have taken that one just a little too far. Just saying, you could do that to me.
Yeah,
I'll be fine with it.
Yeah,
I actually felt bad in our match against Riley and Bateman.
Why?
Well, and Bateman said something to me like, "Hey, Nose, are you going to answer a question in the next round?" And I just went, "Good one, Ben." Just like in that, come on, man, you can do better than that.
Yeah,
if we're going to talk shit. Let's talk shit. But I didn't know the look on his face afterwards. It looked to me like he thought tentatively we might be upset with one another.
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
oh,
no, man.
Ben gets sensitive about it. He's a good guy, but he can get sensitive.
He's a good dude.
Yeah. He pushes the limits, though, sometimes during the matches of comments he makes during the matches. But afterwards, he always tries to check in with you and apologize. So
yeah, I got no problem with ball breaking.
Yeah. Ball breaking's fun.
Yeah. And if you're going to do it, fucking do it.
Yeah.
Don't half step it and be like, gotcha. And be like, you didn't even come close, man. That was a swing and a miss, and you actually lost your balance and are on the canvas. Yeah,
and I'm think you won.
Yeah, I'm not swinging at you because I feel bad. Like, are you all right?
Yeah.
It was not a good shot.
I dig it, man. Anyway, we are way off on the tangent. Where are we at now?
We did. So that was my two, your three. What's your two? Your two is my one, so my one is your three?
Probably.
I mean, my three is your one?
Probably. Amadeus?
Yeah.
That's your one? Yeah, that's my two. Yeah.
Hands down.
Such a great biopic.
The best. Game over. Game over.
All right, look, I'm going to adjust my list. I agree with you. It is the number one.
It's so, the best.
My bad. Should we talk about then my number two, which is your number, what, three?
Three.
Walk the Line. Yeah, let's talk about that one first. I agree. That's a mistake on my part. Amadeus should be number one. Walk the Line, great film.
It is.
James Mangold, the guy who did Logan, directed it. Joaquin Phoenix.
I felt bad for Joaquin because this came out the year after Ray.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx had just won for Ray. Yeah. And of the two, I think this performance is better.
Wow.
It's nothing against Jamie Foxx.
Okay.
He is awesome in it. But I think this is, this was a harder role mm-hmm. for me to convey. Whereas I already had a working knowledge of Ray, and I knew who he was, and I mm-hmm. kind of knew who Johnny Cash was. I knew his songs.
Oh wow!
But to bring to life, I knew who he was. But at the same time, Ray had done the Pepsi commercials. Ray had been more a part of my life through the years. Whereas mm-hmm. Johnny Cash was, he did these iconic songs.
Yeah, but
he had been kind of somewhat a recluse to a kid growing up in the 80s and 90s.
Yep.
It's not like he popped up in my life outside of hearing a song here and there.
Right. Okay.
And I knew the story before going to see the film, but to see Johnny Cash come to life and to understand the character,
mm-hmm.
it's something I didn't know the amount of commonality that I had with him.
Yeah.
Like to where I could empathize with certain aspects of what he was going through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I felt because from that, you could say the harder task is to bring a knowable character to life, what Fox did, but me to make a somewhat unknowable character or unknown character relatable to an audience that may not have been as educated as to who they were.
Yeah.
It's difficult. So I just felt bad. I was like, shit, man, if this was 3-4 years later, you'd probably get the Oscar nom and maybe be the front runner to win.
Probably. It's a fantastic performance. You're right, man. I mean, like, Reese won the Oscar, and I get why she won the Oscar. I don't I don't know that she was the difficult part in the movie. Like, Johnny had to go through so much. She had moments. Of course, you know, like when that woman confronts her in the grocery store or in the that's a tough moment.
That is very tough.
Right? But but most of the time she's this sought-after woman that he wants to be with. And then when they eventually do end up get together and in the movie, like, she becomes almost this like dutiful wife / like angelic presence that saves him. So I get it, but it's Joaquin who's doing the fucking heavy lifting for a majority of the movie. And because it's called Walk the Line about Johnny Cash, Reese isn't even on the poster. It's Joaquin Phoenix's Johnny Cash on the poster. So that tells you who the star of the film is, who's carrying the heavy load.
Did she win lead for that?
Yeah, she won Best Actress for that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not to say that she wasn't the lead, but at the same time, you could have sold me much easier on supporting.
Yeah, sure.
Because this is Joaquin's, you know, gig.
Yeah.
You know, we just talked about it on a Thunderdome not that long ago, so I don't know what we can express the now since past Thunderdome.
Oh yeah.
R.I.P.
R.I.P.
You know,
Good talk about it. That's right. We did talk about it.
Okay. In the past month.
So if you want to go hear what we have to say about it, you can go to our Thunderdome.
Yeah, we dive deeper into it there and talk about the movie. I hope it's one of the ones we actually did, as opposed to the ones where we meander for 15 of the 30 minutes.
No, I think we actually did talk about it.
Yeah.
Because we actually like the movie. So, all right. So then number one is Amadeus.
Yeah, the meanders more so happen when it's a movie we've talked about a bunch or it's a movie we both go, I got nothing to say other than it's dog shit.
It's pretty terrible.
Yeah. Amadeus is number one. If you haven't seen it, please watch it.
Oh, God, go see it. Do not get caught up in the fact that you think it's classical music and it's stuffy film. Blah, blah. Bullshit. It is a fucking good film, a fun time. At times, very funny, comedic film. Mm-hmm. At other times, very harsh, a brutally honest film, and tragic as fuck.
And the best part is it's told from, as you know, what come to find out, but isn't the equivalent of what the movie sells it as. You know,
right.
His rival within the Austrian court,
mm-hmm.
Salieri. But I like the fact that it's told from almost an outsider's perspective, which we are as the audience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the first time he gets introduced to Mozart and he was like, I had to ask God. I've given my life to you. I've given my chastity to you.
Yeah.
I have vowed celibacy so that I can more further devote myself to making beautiful music because you've given me this gift of understanding music. But yet this is the vessel you choose for your unbridled, like, generational talent.
This man baby.
Yeah, and it drives him to no end. Yeah. It drives him practically insane.
Right, because he thinks the world works in this way, and the world should work in this way.
Yeah.
And because the world doesn't work in this way, God must be against me.
Yeah.
His hubris is so incredible that he's got as a personal vendetta God.
Why? God, I've devoted so much to you. Why do you create this mystery?
Yeah.
There's so many mysteries of your being, but this shouldn't be within the realm of music.
Yeah.
Because I've risen through the ranks.
Yeah.
So
I've earned my shot.
Yeah. And this idea of who he is and the right way to do it has proven to be correct.
Yeah.
He has the ear of the king.
Yeah.
he's the only one mm-hmm. that has this ability. Like, there are others that chime in, but when they need, comes down to the musical of like setting the tastes and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. He has the final verdict, and he's still playing politician with all this and, mm-hmm. and getting a gauge of the room. But at the same time, he has earned that. So to have the belief of devoting myself to God is the right way to do this, and I know music and mm-hmm. backwards and forwards, and then to see this guy, this heathen.
Yeah.
Womanizing, gallivanting around as a child, but then you see why. His dad governed him with an iron fist, and he was deprived of childhood. So now that he has, it's like the kids that grew up under the iron fist of a parent and then got to go to college and now have all the freedom in the world mm-hmm. and drop out because mm-hmm. they're just experiencing too much freedom.
Yeah.
And to see an adult like that, but he has – you know, he has income coming in.
Yeah.
He can get a gig as a court composer and stuff like that. It's fantastic.
But yet his self-destructive impulses that don't allow him to stay stable, like employed in a stable way with the cardinal mm-hmm. or with the emperor. He has all these opportunities and even lucks into fortune multiple times. But his inability to recognize the blessings in his life or the gifts he's been given constantly lead him into the bad situation. And then eventually mm-hmm. Salieri is basically an incompetent villain through most of the movie because everything he tries to do to destroy him comes back and bites him in the ass. And Mozart is even more famous afterwards or even more beloved and respected until finally he breaks him with that Requiem.
But at the same time – as he's getting the pages for the Requiem, you could see the delight and getting to experience the music for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
No one else outside of Mozart has heard this piece. Mm-hmm. And the way it destroys him and how beautiful it is.
Yeah.
He's going through and he's visualizing internally how the changes in the tempo and meter and everything as he's experiencing. You can see it across his face. It's such beautiful acting.
Yeah.
From everybody in this.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it is such a stellar movie.
It really is, dude. Yeah, I agree with you. And Miloš Forman directed this thing, the late Miloš Forman.
I might watch it tonight.
Yeah. It's a 3-hour film.
Don't care.
Yeah.
See, it's just – well, the beauty is I know I can start it.
Yes.
And watch the hour or I'll jump to this section and watch this hour. Like, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where I pick it up.
Yeah, I just want to make sure he did pass. I didn't want to say he hadn't passed when he passed. I thought Miloš Forman had passed and he has. Okay, I wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
And you're right. It was my dad's favorite movie, Matt. My dad, a fucking, you know, in essence what they call in Latino or the campesino is what he used to call himself. He's, you know, they had a farm. He was a poor kid from a farm in the small town in Bolivia who comes to this country. He fell in love with Amadeus. Like, it's a film we watched over and over and over again. He would quote the lines to me whenever we were driving anywhere. When a situation called for it, he'd quote like, oh, it's in my noodle. It's all in my noodle. You know, these things that he would make little comments about it and he'd say the creature. Like whenever something would happen that was weird, he'd go, ah, the creature. He'd make that joke like Salieri does. But and it's fantastic too, Matt, because it's an unreliable narrator. So we don't know what anything he tells us is true.
Yeah.
We don't know how much of any of it is true. Right.
And that's the beauty of telling the story from that slant.
Exactly.
We don't have to get this 100% correct because this is the slanted recollection of mm-hmm. an individual that wanted specific outcomes. So he's going to paint a picture mm-hmm. a certain way. Who knows if Mozart was this juvenile.
Right.
And
right.
It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. This is just a bitter enemy of his that got bested and lived longer.
Yeah.
So he gets to tell the tale.
So who's the one that really wins? The one who carries the fucking guilt of
Mozart
what he's done?
Mozart wins.
Absolutely. Even though it's a terrible ending, Mozart wins.
We know who Mozart is to this day.
Yeah.
And I didn't know who Salieri was until mm-hmm. this movie.
Even when they threw his pieces onto the soundtrack, you skip over them. Most people probably don't sit and listen to his compositions that are on
even
the
soundtrack.
Even
though Mozart is not my favorite classical composer.
Yeah.
It's still – it's like what? Yeah. Why spend the time?
And one last thing about the movie, like the visuals that Miloš Forman is able to do, the transitions, like when the landlady is yelling at him and it becomes – he sees the aria. Mm-hmm. Like that's the genius of what you see in an artist. Like even in a moment where he's getting like chastised by his mother, future mother-in-law, he sees an aria. He sees a symphony. He sees possibilities. You know?
Yeah.
It's just fascinating.
It's all music.
Yep. It's all music to him. That's why people can't relate to him. All right. Well, that's our separate lists for the top 10 music biopics. Now we're going to put this list together.
We'll put it together. Are the bongos in the same place? I'll get it this time. You banged last time. I know where it's at.
All right. So am I vamping this time?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope there are other. I'm going to do some honorable mentions. Or should we wait for that one? Do you have other honorable mentions? All right. Well, there we go. Cheyenne was definitely on my honorable mentions, which he mentioned. Buddy Holly story. Also, Selena. So we really love that movie. Jennifer Lopez is fantastic in that film. Great Balls of Fire, a great Jerry Lee Lewis film with Dennis Quaid. Notorious, that Notorious B.I.G. film was pretty dope. Fantastic work there by the actor who portrayed B.I.G., a.k.a. Christopher Wallace. Coal Miner's Daughter's on my thing. I'm Not There, the Bob Dylan biopic that Bob Dylan is not even in or even remotely.
Yeah, they do it from five different perspectives or yep. whatever.
And Nowhere Boy, the John Lennon one, which if you haven't seen is a really interesting John Lennon biopic of his early years before he was a full-on Beatle. All right, so let's compile this list. Obviously, Amadeus is first.
Yep.
And then what?
Well, you have 8 Mile 3.
I do.
I have it
walked,
at 2.
I have Walk the Line at 2.
Well, you know, since you bumped your Walk the Line down,
uh-huh.
go ahead and make that 2.
What a guy.
Thank you.
What a guy. All right, so then what's 3?
Eight mile after that.
Okay.
Straight Out is probably our next combined highest.
Yeah, because that was number 6 for me.
Yeah, it's 4 for me.
Where do you have Ray?
7.
Right. So if it's 4 for you, then Straight Outta Compton should go next. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So then Ray.
Okay.
And then What's Love is our last commonality?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So then What's Love?
Okay.
And what do we have, 3 spots left?
What is love, Matt? All right. What's Love got to do with it?
How many spots we got left? 3 or 4?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 4 spots.
4 spots.
Yeah.
What's your next highest?
Let's see. We did Walk the Line. Amadeus, 8 Mile. What's Love got Ray? Straight Outta Compton. Wow, how do we have 6? Oh, because we have 4. Oh, so all of my top 6 and your top 6 are in there, huh?
No. I don't have my 5 or my 6. You have all your top 6 in there already?
Amadeus, Walk the Line, 8 Mile. What's Love got to do with it? Straight Outta Compton and Ray. Yeah, that's all my top one.
Well, my 5 is Behind the Candelabra. Got an international district. Did any of these others debut at Cannes?
Ah, fuck you. I hate you so much. Probably. I'm sure they did.
But saying I'm sure is not verification. So you're speculating.
Hey, Salieri would say it's sure. All right.
That's fine. Once again, the unreliable narrator. We know not to rely on that individual.
How dare you, sir.
Then my next highest after that is Coal Miners.
All right.
It's 6.
Miners. All right. 6 is fine. Yeah. Right.
What do you got next highest?
La Bamba, which I'd like to put on there.
Sure. I got.
Okay.
What's your next highest after that?
Let's see. God damn. My fingers are getting too fat, dude. All right. What do we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We're down to the last one. I have The Doors at 8.
What do you have? Okay. I got Buddy Holly at 9. So The Doors would technically make it on. Come on, would you give me Buddy Holly since I acquiesced to Walk the Line? Didn't even fight you for that?
You know, I feel like because you gave me at the live event, you gave me that number one. I think.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that. Whatever. You get caught up in the moment. Fuck, I forgot Philadelphia on the Tom Hanks one
way back in the day.
Yeah.
All right.
Counting it down. We already gave it a placement, and then I just didn't write it down.
Every once in a while, I sneak one past Matt Nost.
It happens.
Every once in a while. All right, Buddy Holly story is. That's fine with me. I don't, you know, the doors are where they're at. All right, let's count this
sweet
thing
falsetto.
Out. The top 10 music biopics, yeah.
At number 10.
It's the Buddy Holly story.
Coming in. At number 9.
La Bamba.
At number 8.
Coal Miner's Daughter.
At number 7.
Behind the Candelabra. That's my best Liberace.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. In the 6th spot.
What's Love Got to Do with It?
Numero 5.
Ray.
And the 4 horses.
Straight Out of Compton.
At number 3.
8 Mile.
Finally, our second to last number 2 choice is
Walk the Line.
And the top 10's number 1 music biopic is
Amadeus. Dun, dun, dun. Were you trying to bang that?
It's going to bang. It's like, why? I've never.
Dun, 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 dun. Oh, now, we're not done yet, though, right? We got to do these shout outs, these Patreon shout outs.
We have a Patreon shout out.
Yeah. So sit back. If you've been part of this before, you know the situation. We go through all the shout out, all the Patreon shout outs. Dude, there are so many. There's five pages worth. My God, Matt.
Yeah, there's all a right. lot. We're popular. People are nice to us.
That's very nice to us, yes.
There are only a couple individuals who you guys unfortunately suffered credit card fraud or something.
Didn't go through.
Yeah, it didn't say declined. It said something more along the lines of we couldn't accept because who knows why.
Right. We just couldn't accept you.
Yeah, I don't know why. So anybody that's hearing this, that if you got charged and we're not saying your name, let me know. But I know that's not the case. And then individuals, because I got a message on Twitter from somebody like, are you going to say my name this month? And I was like, if you paid last month.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, that's the way it works. I'm like, yes, that's the – if you've supported the show, you know, actually – you know, your account has been debited, then the following month is when we do the shout-outs for you. So those individuals that signed up this month and aren't going to hear your name right now, it's because you're going to hear it next month.
That's right.
We're going to jump right in. We got a lot of names to get through.
Okay.
We would like to say thank you to all of you before we jump in.
Thank you so much.
If we screw up your name, just know that there's a lot of love behind that screw-up.
Forgive us.
So starting us off at numero uno is Matthew Hasso.
Thank you, Hustle. Mike Barrington.
Peter Ross.
Wiley Todd.
Camilo Gutierrez.
Drew Entz.
Sean Brennan.
Andrew Hayes.
Corey Greathouse Sloan.
Hi, Corey. Robert Haley.
Manuel Rivera.
Mackenzie Horner.
Josh Mabry.
Clay William.
What's up, Clay? Christos Alexakos.
Oh, Alexakos. Eric Grebner.
Jonathan Peck.
Kyle Lopez.
Alec Christie.
Frank Montoya.
Dylan Steiner.
Steve Schluckabier?
Yeah.
I think that's right.
That is right.
Cool.
Rachel Silvestrini.
Hey, Rachel. Jake Higgins.
Old Jakey. Joseph Burt Whistle.
Sean Monk.
Steven Anderson.
Oh, shit. Mark Menchaca.
Followed by George Menchaca.
Oh, Niall Blackie.
Tim Koskuba.
Lawrence Witt.
John Douse.
Joey Anthony.
Finally, Ellis. To complete.
Oh, yeah.
Ellis. Menchaca.
We need to get more Menchacas
on. The Menchaca. Troika.
Oh, we're the Menchacas from Jersey. Sean Naughton.
Andrew Marker.
Brian Seferny.
Jeremy Metz.
Spencer Freight, I think. Or Spencer Freightway.
Kevin Fuss.
Blair Simpson.
Ashley Prowse.
Chipper Beal.
Wayne Murphy.
Dan Somerville.
Philip Renshaw.
Cameron Belgrade.
Ben Archambault.
Rudy A. Martinez.
Joseph Viola.
Ben Cartwright.
Anthony George.
Eric Ritz.
Sunjayanth Fernando.
Brett Yeo.
Matthew Pickardet.
Deborah Torres. Hi, Deborah.
Hello, Deborah. Joey Peter.
Michael Schmer.
AZ Badfish, a.k.a. Marlon Tuttle.
Sure. Eric Bouchard.
Ruben Enriquez.
Matt Hannigan.
Matt Jund.
Josh Baker.
Anthony Casanova.
Adrian Tejeda.
Tyler Akayama.
Ian Brick Beltran Lopez.
Drake Fromsdorf.
Nice. Christian Veselchik.
Dwayne Joseph Burke.
Phil Morissette.
Eric Bloor.
Phil Neglia.
Gulik Granerud.
Ed Buskirk.
Danielle Kelly.
Tim Franco. It's up to me.
Rosa Parra.
Nate Sproles.
John Keefe.
Do you think that's like Sproles' brother?
100% I do. 100% I do.
Edward Dobbins.
Chris Consiglio.
Christopher McIntyre.
Peter Bellin.
Tim Begg.
Lindsay Toll.
Alec Donnelly.
Simon Brouillard.
Keith Archer.
Jason Liao.
Kristen Smith. Kristen.
Jose De La Torre.
Austin Fuentes.
Ryan M. Brandos.
Jonas Marin.
Chris Jones.
April Rybacki.
Elijah York.
David Mitchell Baker.
Maurice Robinson.
Ravi Prasad.
Joseph Sachs.
Adelardo Fuente.
I don't think I've ever seen that name before.
Yeah.
Adelardo?
I like
interesting.
That.
Blake Jensen.
Andres Mendoza.
Marcel Behrman.
Shane Noble.
Aaliyah Moore.
Hey, Aaliyah. MF Doom.
Regan Lovig.
Asa Denning.
Cody Markham.
Nathan Leonard.
Noel Kelleher.
Tyler Spots.
Robert Cooper.
Felipe Hunt.
Patrick Campbell.
Nizar Alabasi.
Enrique Cabrales.
Kevin Shaw.
Loic Ransom.
Ben Quirk.
Dylan Buller-Timsey.
Chris Gohansj.
Isaiah Belcher.
Louis Berrigan.
Dylan Yown.
Alex Ramsey.
Nicholas Smith.
Roque Orellana.
Jonathan Chase.
Fraser Jubb.
Gianvia Canazar.
Andreas Kronstad.
Christian Lundgaard Kjoller.
Nice. Jack McIntyre.
Charlie McKenna.
Jason Taylor.
Simon Huffnagel.
Josh Lawrence.
Mike Shea.
What's up, Mike, brother? Jay Watson.
Thomas Streeton.
Seth Shearer.
Philip Lane.
Seamus Braytag.
Stephen Westaway.
Linnea Nichols.
Ryan McKenna.
Sam Bell.
Joel Rosario.
Matthew Lee Cravens.
John Holloway.
Josh Murphy.
Johannes Schmidt.
Nice. Eric Berrios.
Joshua Stein.
Andrew Erbs.
Houston Bodley.
Giancarlo Simonetta.
Andre, let's see, is that Constantinet? Constantinesco?
Constantinesco.
Constantinesco. Thank you.
That's good. Andy Ortiz.
Andrew Berger.
Chelsea Lewis.
Jim Payne.
Andy Tan.
Laura Deverson.
Adam Johnson.
Catherine Samuels.
Patrick Zamora.
Norwegian Blue, a.k.a. P. Sketoy.
Brian Akins.
Joe Farrelly.
Michael McDade.
Simon Skjot Thompson.
Alan Bennett.
Jacob Pullen.
Rodrigo Valverde III.
Huh. Ewan?
Sure.
Ewan Williams?
Yeah, sure.
Or I don't
Shen.
Know.
Or Shen. It could be Irish, like Shen.
I-E-U-A-N.
Yeah.
However you pronounce that, please reach out. Let me know. I do not know.
Brandon Caridi.
Jeff Saliba.
Ian Morgan.
Julian Key.
Oh, pretty boy Dan Nye.
Oh, looks so handsome. Joshua William.
Ken Reels.
Matt Chipping.
Matt O.
Good old Steve Morris, the cinephiles.
Thank you, Steve. Andrew O'Day.
Martin Collins.
Josh James.
Dale Varley.
Juan Reyes.
Jack Gibbons.
Jamie Loughner.
Jerome Cunningham.
Oh, Magali Dore.
Ricky Rivers.
Gordon Russling.
Matthew Lafrenery.
Aaron Carroll.
Nick Dornoff.
Joe H.Y.
Nick White.
Jeff Peters.
Albert Weirdarma.
Hey, Albert. Josh Ryan.
Jen Kemp.
Will Morse.
Bar Shamrich.
Thomas Price.
Mike Austin.
Alec Musial.
Alexander Marzonia.
N.A. Nicole Lee.
Thorsten Emuller.
Evan Zoller.
Luke Larson.
And Jesse Frost.
Thank you to all of you that support us on Patreon. We would not be here today if it weren't for all of your support.
Yeah.
This is our little thank you every month at the $5 and up and level. Mm-hmm. If you want to donate, go to patreon.com/the top 10. The top 10.
Yeah.
With the number 10. Just hit us up there at $5 and up. We got ideas in the replacement, like we said earlier, for Thunderdome. But if you want to participate in that, we open that up to everybody at $1 and up. There's an email address on a post there. So go to Patreon. Find that post and message us and let us know your thoughts. We are accepting any and all submissions at this point. We've got a couple of good ideas that we both like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And but we also talked about potentially doing a rotation of shows, so that way it mixes it up and keeps it fresh for us.
Yeah.
And as new ideas, if something crops up, we can work that into the rotation later on down the road.
Yeah.
We don't want to be beholden to one idea. We like the idea of doing something different and new and exciting.
Yeah.
So thank you to all of us, all of you rather, that support us on Patreon. We can't thank you enough. You can go to facebook.com/groups/the top 10 show with the number 10 or shop.spreadshirt.com/the top 10 with the number 10. Hit up some merch. We got two new designs over there.
Yeah.
It's all great stuff. And we got more announcements coming up in the near future. So stay tuned for that. We will let you know. And you can follow me at Matt Knost, MattKnost.
Yeah, hit us up for those merch, because we've got the 8-bit one that we've got, but it's a Nintendo kind of homage, and then the other one is an NBA Jam one of me and Matt. So pretty cool shirts. Now the NBA season's kicked off, and Matt's hosting Drop a Dime. It's definitely a reason for you to wear that shirt, walk around supporting Top 10, take pictures of yourself in those shirts, send it into the Facebook group, and we will put it, or email us at top10podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, top10podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, and Matt or I will post it.
All spelled out.
Yeah, all spelled out, and Matt or I will post it on there on the Facebook group. So there you go. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it, as Matt said, every week, and for your donations as well. Like, the show's going. We've got announcements coming for the next live event real, real soon. If we can lock down the details, it's exciting. It's damn exciting.
We're handing out the contract now.
Yep, yep.
We have our people. This is great, though. We do actually have people. We have our people looking over it.
Yes, we do.
And making sure we're reading this correctly.
Yeah.
And that's what we're down to. So
all I can tell you is I got to go get my passport. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We will see you next time on the Top 10 Show.